If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
Have you heard Spike's Car Radio? It's comedian, actor, writer Spike Ferriston sitting on the porch in Malibu talking with some cool people about cool cars and life in general.
My first guest is Jerry Seinfeld. He's right here. He was all right. Don't try to hug him.
Chris Hardwick.
I could feel everything on the road. I mean, it was right. Basically like, it was like unprotected sex for driving.
Jeremy Piven.
I think you and Jerry are spiritually tied to cars, and I respect it and I love it, but I don't quite get it yet, but I want to get it.
Download new episodes of Spike's Car Radio every Wednesday on the Podcast One app, or save time and subscribe now at Apple Podcasts or at podcastone.com.
Get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate, get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love what you do for us over here at CarCast. And we bring it to you, man. We got a lot of good stuff coming up. Man, we just got back from a lot of good stuff. Matt and I just got off a private jet with Mr. Jay Leno.
Yeah.
That was nice.
Thank you, Jay.
Oh, Max Pat, in terms of not having that extra seat for you, we found out what the extra seat is for.
Oh, okay.
For yeah. Jay's feet.
Jay's feet.
Jay sits in the one seat. He takes a big leather satchel and he sets it on the seat in front of him, and then he puts his feet on that seat.
And there were snacks.
Yeah, that still seems like it has precedence over here. Yeah. That makes sense. But
next time, maybe we throw out the option, be like, Chris will massage your feet on the way home.
Well, yeah. Speaking of feet, just being the fetal position in the back of the plane, like he can sit on the commode, right?
Yeah, that's right. There was an extra seat in the bathroom. I like Jay. He was old school the whole time there.
I just want to jump in. We went to Sonoma. We did a Jay Leno's Garage bit with a Newman car. We won't get into all the details, but I shared a little bit with that, I think, with you guys in the past. Whatever. But flying back from Sonoma, there's enough. He flies privately. And there's enough for, there is Jay.
Sweet.
There's a picture of us.
Yeah.
There's flying back from Sonoma on a private jet. First off, it's so
Chris's
good.
Chris's seat.
It's so good. Chris's seat is in front of Jay. And Jay, so you can go to adamcarolla.com or you can go to carcastshow.com and you can see this picture of us on the plane. But we said, so... Here's the breakdown, just so we'll catch everyone up. Rob and Tom are in a dually, and they're towing a race car up to Sonoma, which is, I believe, about 365-70 miles, or something of that nature. It is about when you're towing something, it's about a 6.5-7 hour jaunt.
It's a haul.
It's a haul. We flew up commercially. Landed in Oakland, had a friend, Dave, pick us up, drove out there, real nice, all that. But when we're done with Leno, of course, they said, like, hey, you're going to do this thing with Leno in Sonoma at the end of the day, out on the track, when the track's closed, blah, blah, blah. What's the transportation? And Jay's flying privately. And that means a plane that has 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 seats on it, probably somewhere between 5. The smart money is between 5 and 9.
Yeah.
Somewhere, probably won't be 5, probably won't be 9, probably be somewhere in between those two. And then we don't know what Jay has. He has a producer, he has a director, I don't know who he travels with.
They said sometimes he meets up with a buddy and flies him back, like he just brings a friend or something.
We say, well, here's who we got from our crew. We got DeAndrea and we got Max Pata. What can you do to get us back? And they say, we got 2 spots on the plane, which means Max Pata has to go for 7 hours in the back of a dually towing a trailer back to L.A. And it's a tough ride because they're leaving at 6, 7 o'clock at night and they're just driving through the night. But there was an open chair, but that's for the satchel and Jay's feet with his oil-resistant soles.
And magazines and newspaper.
I
like that old school Jay was just... Yeah. Had a piece of paper in his hand the whole time, just reading. He was talking, being social, but just reading as well.
Mm-hmm. So we had a fun time.
No iPad, by the way. No phone he was scrolling through.
No, he had a computer thing at some point because
he showed you
he
video.
Had a tablet because he was showing me video. By the way,
he is connected. He has his Apple Watch and his phone and his tablet. But
right. Something's going off in here, Kalen. I'm trying to think. I think it was he showing us an Allison or is he showing us a Merlin?
Merlin,
right?
On a stand.
I'll tell you one thing about Jay. Jay knows so much about goddamn cars. He doesn't give any credit to anyone else that knows anything about cars. He pulls out a picture on a smallish iPhone.
And he goes,
look what we got, and it's a picture of a crazy exotic. Engine, 12-cylinder, whatever, with a propeller.
On a stand. That he attached built.
To it. And he shows it to me, like, outside, and the glare's bad. Yeah. And I go, what is that, a Merlin? And he goes, yeah. I go, hey, how about it?
Yeah, how about that? Not even a high five?
Like
a wink or something?
Like nothing. I just picked out some obscure engine from World War II and just eyeballed it from a bad angle on your 4-inch screen.
I noticed that. I was waiting for something.
How about a little love, Jay?
Yeah.
Come on now. So we were shooting over there. I got my Newman car on the track. Yeah.
Not only did he say yes when you said Merlin, he said yes in a way that you were supposed to know that. Yes.
I will take that as a sign of respect.
I think so too, because we did have a conversation about every other celebrity car guy that doesn't know shit about cars.
Yes.
And we went through a list.
We won't mention names, Nick Cannon. But the car guys that just aren't car guys, who claim to be car guys. he didn't rank me. I got to be up there. So we did the bit, and I think it was like the thing about the flight on the private plane is it's a 51-minute flight.
Yeah.
But you don't want it to end because you're just having fun with Jay. And also...
Yeah.
What they don't tell you about the flight is, the flight time is the same as a Southwest flight. It's a little faster. You know, it's like 50-something minutes. What they don't tell you is from the time our SUV pulled into the airport 25 minutes from the track.
At the plane. We just went through a gate. He had a key card. We stopped at the plane and just got out.
From the time the van stops at the plane, from the time the van breaks the hymen of the airport driveway to the time your wheels up, it is less than 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
It was not 15 or 14 minutes. It was 8 minutes or 6 minutes. Like, from the time you pull onto the airport property to the time you're in the air is less than 10 minutes.
They're there. They're waiting. They're ready to go. We took 15 steps from the van to the plane. And by the time we sat down, the plane was in the air. Actually, you got on the plane. You hopped in real quick to take a leak. And by the time you weren't even done, Jay's like, "Where's Adam? We're taking off." I'm like, "He's in there. We're going."
From the time you land to the time you leave the airport is 2.5 minutes.
That's it.
That's the whole point. It's the top and the bottom, not the whatever. But you know what Jay told me when we were driving laps around the track? Perhaps I've said too much. When we were driving around, Jay said to me, I said, how many gigs a year do you do? About 200. I said, wow. He said, but we're talking about him picking me up from Atlantic City and flying me back. He basically said, look, and it makes sense. He said, it's all about sleeping in your own bed. It's like if you got to get up the next morning and meet everyone in the lobby and get to the airport and go through security, he said, it's a huge pain in the ass. He said, I do 3 gigs a week. One of the gigs pays for all the flights, the private. So his approach to it, and he's smart, is he's basically saying, I can do this. If I can play Atlantic City on a Saturday night, and you don't get further out than Atlantic City. You just don't. I play there. You just, there's no airport nearby. I have to drive to Philly, blah, blah. If I can play Atlantic City on a Saturday night and sleep in my own bed on a Saturday night, I will do this. But for every three gigs, one of them is going to be devoted simply to getting me there and back from all three gigs. Still getting paid a lot, never deal with an airport, never deal with the crowd, never deal with the people, never deal with the scene. And it's actually kind of a good, like, would you guys do, you make, you know, he makes a ton of money, but one big chunk of that goes to you getting to this and sleeping in your own bed every night.
Yeah.
Kind of an interesting point. All right.
That's what that does, like, for your mood.
Oh, my God. It's the, when we do Atlantic City, Mike August, I'll see in the lobby at 5 a.m. And then we drive to Philly, and then we take a Southwest, whatever. It's like,
I'm telling you, like, obviously Jay doesn't own the plane. It's all whatever, NetJet cards or whatever. It's part of the venue does it. But the convenience of doing it, we spent more time yesterday morning meeting here at the shop, driving to Burbank, doing a couple U-turns, Nick, and getting to Burbank Airport, and then sitting in the Burbank Airport. We spent more time doing that than it took for the flight to get to.
Yeah.
And then it was a 40-minute ride from the airport to the track.
During the descent.
Absolutely.
You know, that's right. All the way down. They just handed you your water or whatever. You're like, what's going on?
I think I was the last human being to be served. And the last human to receive crab cakes when we were in D.C.
I noticed that.
It's not a blessed life, is it?
No. I don't envy you.
All right.
Made up for it yesterday with cocktails and free crackers.
So we... Yeah, and Jay doesn't drink, so it always sucks flying with Jay. Yeah. So you have to be the one to kind of, what do we got? Oh, hey, little bottles of booze. Yeah, let's start putting them in little bottles.
You gotta think ahead on the bring your own beer on a Jay flight. A cooler or six pack.
I gotta tell you, I didn't appreciate the judgmental tone that the pilot gave me. I said, where's the beer? And he's like, we don't have beer on this flight, sir.
We don't have beer on this flight.
I'm not flying the plane, dude. All right. So we went to Sonoma. And we took, by the way, Bruce Meyer and Terry Kargas are coming in a second. Terry, you know, they've both been on the show, but Terry, you know, is the director at the Peterson Automotive Museum. I want to get by there and see this new event celebrating 70 years of Ferrari, man, seeing red. This is my
Needless
kind
to
of
say,
event.
It's all red. We went there when it opened. It was the silver room, and now they have a red room.
Let's take a... So we got... the Le Mans 935 there. Bruce Meyer owns the one that came in first place. I own the one that came in second place overall, but first in its class. I think it's like the size of the fuel tank that separated the two. It's an interesting thing. We can ask Bruce about
it. So there was the cheats.
We heard the cheats. Heard about some cheating going on well.
Not on the Newman car, on the other car.
Right, but let's... let's go ahead and so for the first time, that car's been taken out in earnest, I guess, and driven a little bit seriously. Sonoma is very technical. I'm not making excuses. I don't like that track. It's just too many hills you can't see over. It's so technical. And it's, you know, people go, well, so what? That's just like more of a challenge. And it's like, goodness sake, it's enough challenge. I don't need to up it.
You don't go out and do enough races per year to make Sonoma fun. If you did Sonoma three times a year, you'd start to like it. But for right now, Laguna Seca is such a beautiful track, and it's a track that you enjoy. So it's someone like, hey, if I'm going to race twice or three times a year, you want to go there.
And Sonoma has, for this kind of racing, a fair amount of concrete around it.
It does.
There's a lot of concrete around it, and it's like... Laguna Seca is a little more like, hey, if you miss something, just go off into the gravel.
Yeah.
You know, there's some concrete to avoid.
Yeah.
So there's this element of, I don't want to push that hard around there. Bruce is eyeballing us through the glass now. We'll bring Bruce and Terry in just one moment. Well, maybe
Porsche 935, right? We got it. You got it last August. Bruce Canepa has been kind of going through it, making it safe, race prepping it, putting another seat in it so you guys can ride and do a little instruction kind of thing.
Right.
But we've missed that car. He's had it for months.
Right.
And when we got there, it was so nice to see because it's so cool looking. And we kind of missed seeing it in person. And this is your first time driving it.
It looks great. So Max Pata just sort of whacked together a one lap around Sonoma in the 9:35, and then we'll talk to Bruce about his and the Whittington brothers and all that stuff. You got that, Chris?
Yeah, so we'll put this up at carcastshow.com as well. But for now, listen to this thing.
I'm telling him, just drive at 7 or 8 tenths. He'd probably say 3 tenths, but he's probably driving at 8 tenths, and then I'll try to hang with him. And the pedals are so far over to the right on this car, it's insane.
And a clutch cable goes through between your feet.
Right. At least has a normal shift pattern. Such thank you, Max Banner.
Yeah, it's good. So you guys were good.
Bruce is pumped.
Yeah. Do you like the car, though?
It felt like a regular car to me.
But different than your front engine 2+2 car and your...
Those cars are... The tube frame cars feel like tube frame cars.
They feel like race cars.
Yeah. Like, I feel the steering is kind of go-karty. The pedals are all, tilting and they're slid right in front of you and stuff like this. This feels like you're driving a hot-rodded car.
With no interior.
Not a car that started off as a bunch of tubes.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a different thing.
Is the front light?
Yeah, the front's light. Wants to push. That's why there's a lot of sort of sawing away at the wheel with no effect. Should we?
It looked good. It sounded good.
Yeah, it sounded good. All right, good. Well, good timing. Right. Let me tell you guys about Garage Boss, and we'll bring in Terry and Bruce Meyer. And we just got off the road from Detroit. I'm almost a little... I woke up this morning, wasn't sure what day it was from all the weird weekend and travel and everything else I've been doing. Garage Boss, man. The new Reacher height adjustable drain pan gets right under your drain plug to prevent misses or splashes. Works with low profile cars, cars on ramps, jacks, trucks on the ground or on the ramps or on the jacks, drains into sealed container. All you clean up is the catch funnel. The pieces snap back into the drain container, and it works just that easily. Garage Boss has a whole line of stuff, and we use a lot of it. Plus, they have a new line of crystal clear funnels. I like that. I don't like weird
like
foggy
idea.
Ones. Look like an old top from a. Remember when Porsche had, I don't know, was it on a 911, had that weird fold-back top on the weird Targa thing that had the fold-back, and then the back window would always go weird and foggy and all screwed. I don't like that. So, exclusively at AutoZone or AutoZone.com, check out the video at AutoZone.com, and you can check out Garage Boss. That's, or you can go to GoGarageBoss.com. GoGarageBoss.com. Bruce Meyer, Terry Kargas, good to see you guys.
Hi, guys.
How are you?
Terrific.
I have seen more Bruce Meyer than I've seen my own children in the last 4.5 days.
That's a true story.
He's everywhere.
He's omnipresent. He's Bruce Meyer. And let's focus on you, and then we'll get to 935s and all sorts of fun with that. The Peterson, which is just unbelievable after the renovation, has a new exhibit, Seeing Red, and it's located in the Bruce Meyer Family Gallery. How coincidental. And so it's celebrating 70 years of Ferrari. So what? Give us the top five Ferraris that are there, guys.
In that exhibit.
And then tell me 4.5 of them are yours, Bruce. Well, you don't have many red. You don't have a lot of red.
I have no red Ferraris.
Interesting.
What? I have two silver ones and a yellow one.
Right. Yeah. So you're in the silver collection exhibit that they did.
Precious metal.
Precious metal.
Right.
We called it the silver room.
Yeah.
Right. That's what we called it.
Pretty special, I thought.
Yeah. That was
great,
cool.
Great color. Yeah.
Terry, what is in that? Give us your personal top three or five Ferraris in that room.
There's a Niki Lauda F1 car.
Oh.
312 T2.
79, 80, something like that?
My hero cars of all time.
Yeah. That'd be like 79, 80 in there?
The same car that Gilles Villeneuve drove.
Yeah.
But it's, to me, that's one of the most special.
I love that car, too.
Yeah.
I think there's one of those going up this year at Pebble Beach, not the Niki Lauda one per se.
Jody Scheckter.
Yeah. So that one's coming up. Ooh, that's a cool car.
Oh, yeah. No, it's gorgeous. I mean, I love those cars. And, of course, the Schumacher, there's an F1 Schumacher car. But the Chip Conner GTO has to be the prize.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something.
Chip Conner.
The other thing I want to point out is that Bruce was personally, he not only came up with the idea for the Seeing Red, but personally contacted all the owners and convinced them to send these.
That's Bruce's favorite
cars.
Activity is contacting other people and telling them to do stuff.
Bring your car over here.
What are you doing? Sitting? What? Why are you sitting? It's 4 a.m, Bruce. I need you in your car.
Who's going to say no?
Nobody ever says no.
Oh, God, Adam, that is so funny. Because we just came back from Detroit.
Yeah.
I don't know if you talked about that at all.
No, but we're going to get into it. Wait.
You're our hero.
But there's the, I think it's, for all intents and purposes, the very first ever badged Ferrari, the first Le Mans winning Ferrari, another, from the Indy Museum, that Ellen sent
the LM, 250 LM. So.
Oh, we love the 250 LM, such a beautiful, like, at the first. Is that the first rear-engine or mid-engine?
Grand
Ferrari?
Touring, you know, kind of a, like a
beautiful car. It's a beautiful car.
So it's interesting because Terry's attracted to the Formula One cars. Terry and his brother, we've been family friends forever. And these guys go, you know, really follow the F1, are real racing fans. And I'm more like Grand Touring and Le Mans centric. But it's interesting because I was interested in seeing where Terry went. And he went with the F1, which is fun because that's his. I mean, he knows the history so well, and you know he's our executive director at the Peterson, so he knows his way around the racing world.
F1 has become too computer designed for me in the modern version, but that sweet spot of 1975 to like 1980, especially that Ferrari that you're speaking of, that is right. That is right there.
There's a video of Gilles Villeneuve and René Arnoux in South Africa that is one of the most exciting all-time F1 shots, bouncing off of each other lap after lap. It's just sensational. That in that car, I mean, that's when racing, when men were men, that kind of thing.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I just had this. It's funny. So I'm excited. And now is the exhibit is up and running now?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And how late? Give us the hours of the museum. I'm asking
10 a.m.
for personal reason. 10 to 6 p.m.
10 to 6. Daily.
Okay. Because, it's weird. I was looking for an excuse to get to Laurie's and have some prime rib.
Yeah, okay.
And the family loves it, and I love it, but I'm looking for an excuse to make the drive.
Oh, so like all pie and family steak.
I've now combined the go to the museum, go to the Peterson, take a few hours, walk around that, then when they close up at 6, head down to Laurie's.
Okay, but also keep in mind that the Peterson just opened their restaurant, and it's fantastic.
Drago, the first time the four Drago brothers in town have ever gotten together for a single store, single restaurant.
Really?
It's a world-class Italian restaurant.
Ooh, yeah.
I was in but there. I had some prosciutto, and it was fantastic.
Is that? But that's open past 6?
No. Right now, it's not. We close at 6, but in about 6 months, they'll start opening for dinners.
That's awesome. Yeah, because it's a perfect location. It's
great
Fairfax
parking.
And Wilshire. It's perfect, and the museum can close, and you can keep serving dinner. It should be like a beautiful restaurant. You
know, by the way, the Peterson is the best location to do events, and I know it's available for events, and the events that you guys do now will all be catered by that restaurant. So
correct.
You can get the best food and cool location. You can stare at Ferraris, and they have the rooftop deck that we went up there when they finished building it.
Yeah.
Like, it's a badass place. Like, go and check it out, but if you're going to do an event, go do an event there.
Matt, bring him with us.
Yeah.
I love it. Couldn't say it better.
So
thank
we got
you.
So there's a bunch of stuff. So we went to Detroit and we did some stuff.
I want to tell you my
theater.
Favorite cars in the Stingray.
Please.
So, what I think we've assembled the first Le Mans winner. We have three Le Mans winners there. We have the first Le Mans winner, which is that number 22 Barchetta.
Right.
Bob Lee's car from Reno.
And we have that Luigi Canetti drove that.
Right. 23 of the 24 hours.
Featured in the 24-hour war, I believe.
Well, maybe. This was 1947.
But when we talked about the history of Ferrari in that movie, after the war, he built a car. He went to Le Mans. Canetti drove it, and they won.
Right. No, so, I mean, it's all part of the war, the history of the war, for sure. But we also have the 65 winner, which was the LM, and that was right during the war period, you know, the Ferrari
right.
Ford Wars. That's the LM
right.
that won, and that's owned by the Indy Speedway Museum. Ellen Byerly.
That's the 250.
The 250 LM.
Right.
Yeah.
And then we have Chip Conner's car, which is the GTO, which is arguably the finest GTO in the world. That also was a class winner at Le Mans. And then we have Charlie Nürburgring's Testarossa and Rob Walton's, you know, California Spider. We have some fabulous cars, very
That's
iconic
the best
cars.
Of the best. Yeah. Chip, very nice gentleman. I always try to remember who I was talking to, but I think Chip's the gentleman I ran into at the Winter Speed Days at Laguna Seca. And I think he had his Cobra and I'm trying to think, maybe that GTO. And he was like, yeah, come on in the trailer, the transport with the mahogany in the front part with some air conditioning. And he's a tall guy, nice guy, friendly guy. He must have an incredible collection.
Insane. You know, he's probably my best pal. So we've been dealing with his company since 1961. So I dealt with his dad, and his dad's, well, you got to meet my son, Chip. And that's how I met Chip like 35 years ago. And he has an incredible collection. Very private guy and good stuff.
And good to us.
Is he out? And we're. I'm trying to figure out now who I was talking to. And
I think I spoke to Chip too. I think he and I exchanged some emails. We were talking about a couple cars.
Does he want to do some vintage racing or get into some 510s or do something
that? He is always at the vintage races. He has a boss, you know, one of the Bud Moore Mustangs.
Yeah.
He races that. He has a 935, the Momo car.
Love that car.
You'll be going wheel to wheel with him. And
he going to be driving it?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't.
No, he drives it.
I didn't see him out. I mean, I have seen him out there.
He's really a very good driver. He raced in the Porsche Cup in Asia.
Yeah, there's the Momo car. That's great.
By the way, rubbing is not racing when you're out there.
The Momo
not with the Momo car, Canepa's car, your car.
Is that Momo 935 a tube frame or did it start?
It's a Yost car.
It has a tub.
A tub.
That was such a great era in IMSA. Jean Pierrot used to make pasta he'd choose a team each weekend, each race, to cook pasta for.
Well, we're expecting pasta at the track this year. Sure.
Yeah. God bless the passing of Edelbrock, because remember when he used to fire up the...
Oh, it's his margarita machine or whatever? His blender?
He'd say, we fire it up at 5 p.m. I'd say, all right. And then one day, I think I showed up to the trailer, and I was like, where are the margaritas? And he's like, it's not 5 yet. And I was like, it's 4 57. He's like, yeah, but it's not five.
But with like a point, like he pointed at you and it was so gross. He's like, it's not five yet.
And I'm like, well,
like
yeah.
5:01, he was two drinks in.
We're done racing, so where's the margarita? We got to wait another 2 minutes and 37 seconds.
Yep. Vic was a really close friend for a very long time.
Oh, there he is. With his margarita bar at the track.
I love it. But, you know,
I guarantee that picture wasn't taken before five.
That was the fun. We called it the fun team.
Yeah.
And red was his color, and he had a beautiful yacht and his airplane.
We were on his
and,
yacht.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
for
Victoria.
Cocktails.
Yeah.
After five.
Yeah. And he liked his cocktails.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I just spoke with his daughters because there was a rumor out that they were selling their cars, and it's not true. And they're keeping the cars. But Vic was such an enthusiast. And he drove right up until the last, breath.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they called him Vic Edel Block because you could not get around that guy. and they were kidding with his daughters. You know, he taught them well, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because they all raced.
Cammy and
Christy.
Christy, that's right. They're nice. We see them at the track. So, Terry, how many of those precious Ferraris are in this particular exhibit?
Nine cars in the exhibit, and then there are two down on the showroom floor. It depends on when you come into the museum, because we'll have several cars in the vault for the vault tour.
Yeah.
The Barchetta, the famous Edsel Ford Barchetta, is in the museum now. I don't know. You've seen that. You're familiar with that car.
The black one, white walls.
Oh, no. Tell me about it.
The Ford family bought it for Edsel, for Henry the Deuce, and from Enzo.
Uh-huh.
It was shipped to Detroit, and it had a white interior, and Harvey Firestone's a close friend of the Ford family, and he said, no, that car has to have white walls, and had a set made and shipped him up for the
I've
car.
I've never seen that car.
Yeah.
Well, Chris will find a picture of that. So we got Detroit to talk about.
Yeah.
We went out there. We had a great time. We ended up going to see Roush's facility. We broke off early because we had to catch a flight, and we wanted to run by the museum and look at a car that I'm interested in. Oh, there it is. We're looking at it. It looks amazing.
Yep.
Such a period piece.
Last Barchetta made.
Yeah.
And that's down in the vault, as they say.
We'll throw pictures up on carcastshow.com, and then you can go to the museum and see it in real life.
We went to Ken Lingenfelder's place.
Did you have fun in Detroit? That worked for you?
It was so good.
Yeah. Good. My first time there ever.
In Detroit?
Yeah. And I was like, everybody should go here. The weather's so nice. The cars. Every single building is owned by Ford or Roush.
Yeah.
But although we were kind of just wherever you told us to go, Bruce. So I felt like everything was really nice and green, and everything was owned by Ford and Roush.
Well, the Roush part of our tour was Terry. Terry has a long relationship and worked for years for Roush.
A long time, 15 to 17 years.
Yeah.
There are 33 buildings out there. They have three buildings with 30 dinos apiece in them.
Wow.
Yeah. Largest advanced powertrain company in the country, and now maybe in the world, other than some of the factory stuff.
Unbelievable. We also got a chance to talk to Bruce Kenepa for a little bit about your 935.
So I'm just dying to hear how it went, because you were there just this weekend, right?
Yeah.
You were driving yesterday. The 935.
Yeah. Yeah, yesterday,
I was looking at the video of that lap. I mean, you look great.
Well, thanks.
And your shifts were smooth and quick. I loved it.
I never have driven a Porsche. I don't think I've driven any Porsches.
Yeah,
I'm glad you're pronouncing it right.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, to be fair, I my brother-in-law is German, and I said to him once, "What is it, Porsche?" He likes Porsches, and I said, "Porsche or Porsche?" And he said, "When I'm in Germany, it's Porsche. When I'm here, it's Porsche." And I was like, all right, I'll buy that.
Bruce and I were touring Dr. Wolfgang Porsche, and that will lead to another part of the story. But we asked him, and he said Porsche.
All right, then I'll go with Porsche. Screw you, Christoph. So I had never driven the car. I don't think I'd driven a Porsche before. I just never had any. And I was told a lot of stories about the rear end and what was going to happen. So the process for me to get there and to try to get up to speed in a car I'd never driven before. And also, I couldn't believe how far the pedals were to the right. I was like, I got in the car, and it's like, what are the pedals doing so far to the right?
Because mine's
so
broken.
So used to these
race
cars where they just move everything where you kind of want it, and then Bruce Kennebaugh's like, this is a car. It's a real car. This is how they did it. And I was like, but they got this weird saddle that goes over the top of the clutch cable that goes down the middle of the thing. So all your notions about where you put your, and I'm like, well, where's the dead foot? Where do I put my left foot? And he's like, yeah, put it right here where the body bends. And it's like, yeah, but where's the thing? Yeah. It's like, there's no
the
thing.
Dead pedal. There's no like dead
there's
pedal.
Just a place where you can kind of put your other foot. So I was like, ah, okay. So I got in the car with Ken, I'm going to get his last name in a second. A professional driver.
Yeah.
Bruce is one of Bruce's lieutenants. I'll figure it out in a second. But anyway, nice guy. So I said, well, I'll just sit in the passenger seat.
And you have two seats in that car.
Bruce put another seat in that car for this purpose. And I said, you get in the car, I'll get in the car, and you just drive me for a few laps. And he drove me for a few laps. He was probably driving 8/10 or something. And I sort of like, okay, I can feel it. I got a little bit. And then we got into the car, and he said, well, now we'll switch places, and you drive. And I said, just show me, just give me the hand thing, up, down, you know, slow down, or turn in, or turn out, or whatever. Grab the wheel. Like, I don't care. We'll just go try
this. Or cover your eyes and scream. whatever you feel comfortable doing. Just some sort of hand gesture.
I did see.
You can't hear.
he was an instructor there at Sonoma with the Audi experience or something. He's probably done 200,000 laps. But two times I did see his right foot do the imaginary brake on the floorboard. Like it's a feather in your cap when you can make the driving instructor.
It makes you giggle a little bit, right? You got to smile.
Trying
for a
to brake. And I guess that's a sign, too. So his left hand was going down, but his right foot was going brake.
Grab it for the dash.
So we did, I think we did about 5-8 laps that way. And then he just went, well, let's go out, try it yourself. And what we did is we just put Kennepa out in front in a 935, which is nice because if a guy's driving a Formula Atlantic and he says, just follow me, we don't know whether your car's going to stay on that line or not. But if you're driving – now, Bruce's 935 has been breathed on a little bit.
A little bit.
It's sitting about 2 inches lower than mine. It's got a little more power. It's got a little more everything. But for the most part, if he's going 7 or 8/10, you can kind of follow him around.
That's the big thing. Follow his line, see his breaking points, get a good idea of what should be happening. Because like we said earlier, you don't get on that track much, so it's nice to follow him around. Not too close, because his car shoots fire out when he downshifts.
Yeah. But it felt like just driving a car. You know, it felt like a normal car. And the thing is, if you drive enough different race cars, nothing really jumps out. It's like, you'll never get that good. But if you drive this whole variety of cars, nothing strikes you as, oh my God, I didn't know what to expect. It's like, if you just never get used to one thing, and you'll sort of be okay at all of them. I don't think you'll be wired in, but you'll be okay.
So were you impressed with the acceleration and the handling? And
yeah, everything felt really good, but the last few cars I've been driving around have been the Newman Turbo, you know, Z cars with 650 horsepower and 14-inch wide slicks on the back and stuff. So I was used to the performance or the grip or the brakes, like all the stuff that, you know, I didn't climb out of my 5'10 and get in that car. I climbed out of a car that had the same horsepower and had the same weight ratio. But what struck me is you were driving a car, not a pile of tubes that have been constructed, but an actual car.
It's hard to explain, but you're saying it feels different.
Well, you look super comfortable. I mean, just those in-car cameras and just watching you.
Do you have a preference after that?
I would like so what happened with me is I immediately climbed out of this car, and I mean immediately, and then right into Newman's 2+2 1987 turbo car for a thing that we're doing with Leno's Garage. And he says hi, by the way.
Totally
got back from Detroit.
Great.
And that just immediately felt like a totally different piece. Like the way the pedals were, the way the steering felt mechanical. It felt like a purely bespoke race car. Didn't feel like any hot, like you're out hot rodding dad's car around. It just felt like you just climbed into an A race car.
So now it felt more like a race and less like a track day. Right. You know, like the track day cars, you kind of feel like, you know, like you like go up to Ferrari Challenge, you know, like the guys, they all roll up in their FFs and then they park next to their 458 race cars. And then at Sonoma, last time I was there, I did a couple laps, just did a ride along in some of those Ferrari Challenge cars. But there is a feels a little bit different in the what seems like the dedicated race car, two-frame car that you're talking about versus the cars that are sort of converted into.
Yeah, it's a more mechanical feeling. It just everything feels a little more rigid, and it feels like what it should feel like. It the difference between something that was metal, that was a tub, that had been reinforced and then produced into a race car, versus something with a bunch of geometry that's a, you know, a sand rail frame with a bunch of suspension, bunch of stuff made by Tilton hanging off it. You know, that's what it felt like.
Do you race your 935 or you just drive it down Rodeo?
Just down Rodeo.
Because I've seen that happen.
Yeah, no, I actually I do drive it in the street. And I don't think there's a prettier 935 than Adam's car, that Hawaiian Tropic. I mean, that is so significant and so famous. And, you know, that car battled the car that we have in 79. And I'm just so happy you have that car, Adam. You're such a great custodian for that car.
We got to get the two cars out together for some photos or something.
Yeah, that would be like, we got to get one too. You know,
as soon as Kennebo gives it back.
But I do. I'll take my. Yeah.
I bet I got to pay him first.
Yeah, I got to pay him to do that.
Get ready. You'll get a FedEx box with the bill. That's the way it works.
The first one arrived already.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But he does a great job. And I do. I'll do a track day with our car.
Yeah.
Ken Dobson was the guy I was trying to think of over there.
He's nice. He's great.
He's sweet. He's like, I'll shoot you an email. I was like, all right, we'll talk. Yeah, we're going to lower the car a little bit and do a few other things to it. But, I love your Whittington Brothers car. I think it's aesthetically amazing. I know Bruce did a remod. This is Bruce Kenapa did. Sort of remod. I'm in construction mode. Rebuilt the car, and it's amazing. I love it. I love the K body style, the Kremer, and I just think it's amazing. When we're talking to Bruce, about rebuilding the car, he was telling some pretty cool stories. Like he said, into the sort of rocker panel on the right side.
Oh, you're talking about my car now.
Yeah, your car. Yeah.
Oh, God, there's so many stories with that car. You know, it was buried for 30 years in the Indy Speedway Museum basement, so it's very unmolested, never been crashed. And we heard all these stories about how the Whittingtons ended up owning the car and, you know, the money that was paid and how it was paid and the cash payments. And, you know, we weren't sure. I mean, they were all so wild, we couldn't believe it. And then I talked to Bill Whittington. I talked to Klaus Ludwig. Bruce talked to Kremer, you know, both Kremer brothers. And they all the stories jibed. I mean, that car is so colorful. But, you know, and with Porsches, they have, the heat kind of panels run right on the side of the car, you know, right on against.
Like where sill plate.
Right, sill plate. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Sill plate, that's the word. And we found this panel, you know, that opened up, and we didn't know what that panel was. So just in passing, Bruce asked, you know, Bill Whittington, do you remember, you know, why you had these removable panels? And he said, oh, yeah, we hid the nitrous in there.
Yeah.
And we had a little button, and we could push it, and they qualified on the pole everywhere. And, you know, that gives you another 100 horsepower right now. But he said the problem was we'd get so, you know, overambitious with that nitrous, we'd blow up the engines, you know. So they had, it was.
But they only really did it for qualifying. Right.
That was the idea, but it was still there if you needed it.
I thought they might have had something else in there that was being
imported. Oh, yeah. No,
something of a powdery nature.
The best story, though, is still the story of when Kanapa and Chip and the caper they pulled on Bruce and that car up at Laguna.
That was the best. That was another winter speed days.
And were you there?
I was there. Okay. Yeah. We were there. I probably met Chip there at that point, but we were there with a Newman turbo car, same sister car to the one I drove yesterday.
Yeah, the 88 car.
And we saw the whole thing where the DEA guys with the windbreakers and the flatbed and the federal marshals and everything were going to. The Whittington brothers were notorious drug smugglers and probably everything else smugglers. And so Bruce Kanepa set up a sting operation.
Well, it was Albert Arciero.
Oh, sorry.
And Albert, you know, the Arciero brothers, you know, they had the Lola, and they had great cars, Indy cars. Dan Gurney drove for them. So they were early on. They were there with, you know, all the real founders of road racing. So Albert, who's still very much a sportsman, read about the Whittington brothers getting re-indicted for laundering money, this time through a jet charter. And this was like in November before the January winter speed.
Right.
So they thought, so, he sent me pictures and it showed the DEA guys walking out of their offices with computers and files, and they had this jet charter. In fact, Preston Henn, who's a well-known collector who just passed away in Florida, he had his G650 in their hangar. They locked everything down. So it was a big deal, especially in the motoring world. So Albert is sending all this stuff to Bruce and me and everybody, and we're just saying, God, those guys, it's amazing. They're, you know,
yeah,
just how could they do it again? And so, right, so then Canepa and Albert start talking about, why don't we do something? Bruce's birthday's coming up in December.
We got a picture of it.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
I'm wondering what you guys are looking at. So that's it. And so they said, Bruce's birthday's in December. Why don't we go and get these guys
dressed up? Yeah, we'll get him a heart attack.
We'll go down to his garage in Beverly Hills, and we'll just tell him we're here to repossess the car, bring it in for government, blah, blah, blah. So then they started talking about it, and you know how when you start planning a caper, one guy thinks of something else and something else. And I said, why would you do it in his garage? Let's just do it when he's out there with everybody at Laguna Seca and, make a big deal out of it. Of course, I had no clue. And these guys, I mean, they hired a consultant, a movie director. They had a cast. I mean, they spent a shitload of money. And they, of course, when you start spending money.
Oh, you don't look happy. You look sad.
I actually helped push it up on the truck, if you can believe it. I don't know where these pictures are coming from. This is great. You guys are so good. So anyways, they approached me, and I just come out off the track, and I went over to see a friend of mine, Jeff Lewis, who also has a 935, just to kind of spread the exuberance. I mean, driving one of those cars is really a treat.
Yeah.
And so all these guys, the Audi team was there, and they were all dressed in black. And I looked over, and this guy came up to me, one of the pit guys, said, there's some guys that want to talk to you about your car. These guys, the DEA guys. And I look over, and they look like the Audi team. So I think, cool, I'll go down and talk to them. Well, as I got closer, I thought, holy shit, these guys had badges on, they had Glocks, they had handcuffs, the DEA jackets. You know, I just wanted to throw up. I'm trying to think, did I pay my taxes? I was trying to think, what did I? I mean, it just felt like somebody just pulled the rug out from it. Yeah. You don't know what it is. And so they said, are you Mr. Meyer? And yes, you own this car? And I said, well, yeah. And he said, it's part of an ongoing drug investigation, and we need to
confiscate
the car. And I'm going, you're kidding me, right? And Danny Sullivan is about 10 feet away. And Danny is just, he's the greatest. Great. And so he's saying, it's a joke. He's telling his buddies, it's a joke. Well, after a couple of minutes, it was clearly not a joke. I mean, these guys were dressed to...
And also, the thing about this kind of thing is I'm just sort of breaking it down. Like, what would be going through my mind if somebody did this to my car? Which is, I might be thinking, like, there are times in life where you get pulled over or a cop wants to know what you're doing standing in front of your own house because you forgot your keys or something. And your mind goes, I'm going to straighten this out pretty quick. But if they confiscate your car, you could be thinking, I still own this car. They can't own this car. But you could also be thinking, I'm probably not going to see this car for 3 years. Like, they're going to go, we shouldn't have confiscated it, but we have to keep it until after the trial, if you ever get it back at all. Like, all the stuff. Like, I'd be thinking,
not in a nice climate-controlled room.
I'm not going to see this car for 5 years.
Yeah.
If I see it again, it's going to be a long time. So that, I don't know what was going, we were sort of doing some math math?
It took me by such surprise. I was just, first of all, I thought it was a joke. And then I realized it's not a joke. And I said, do you have any idea about this car? Because these guys, the consultant turned out to be ex-Special Forces and an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
He had every answer for everything.
Uh-huh.
And he said, we're not a problem. He said, we have a facility in Modesto. It's an IRS facility. That's where you send your taxes.
Beautiful.
So, I mean, he had every answer. And he said, it'll be well cared for. And I thought, are you kidding me? And then I started thinking, oh, God. And But, you know, friends of mine said you were so relaxed. Well, what do you do when six guys are there with Glocks and handcuffs? I mean, you're going to take them on?
Paperwork and badges. And
please. You know. They printed business cards. They thought of everything.
This is what happens when you spend when your friends spend $15,000 to pull a joke.
Well, yeah. What people don't really know
more
is...
like 50 grand.
You're usually... Everyone wants to know, like, why not a bigger reaction? Because you're so stunned.
Yeah.
You don't know what to do. And then also... The guy's got Glocks and windbreakers. Right. Like, what are you going to do? A cartwheel?
Yeah.
Kick one in the chin and then wrestle the Glock away?
The Bruce Lee, take them all down?
You're holding them down. Take the car. Go, I got them. You know what, holding them down.
You know what would have been the ultimate, though? What the ultimate gag or goof would be the two-parter. Now, what we should have done next time is we get somebody on their side. The guys are pulling the prank, and we get one of them to defect over to your side, and he says, Bruce, they're going to play this goof on you. And then we get one of the actors to get a Glock and put blanks in it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then we pay him off to go rogue, right?
Yeah.
And then Bruce is in on it, and Bruce is like, I don't know what to do. I don't do it. And at some point, he grabs the guy's Glock and shoots him three times.
We launch a couple squibs
in
on
which
your
case,
oh,
Kenepa would be like, oh, my God, no!
Gone
no.
Very wrong. Yeah. Oh,
that would have been good.
That would be hilarious. So the other thing, my son was worried I was going to have a heart attack, even though I wasn't like... But, I mean, it was pretty traumatic. I mean, just the whole thing. I mean, just being surrounded by these guys is just hard on your system.
They call these first world problems, people.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you.
A card that's worth $25,000 taken from you?
Yeah, that's
right? Yeah.
How about, as long as we're talking about cars, how about you get yourself some Geico, man? You just go to geico.com in 15 minutes. You could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. Get a little extra money. Save up. Save that 15%, buy yourself a 935, take it out to winter speed days, man, with the money you save.
Pull a joke on a friend.
At Geico, play a very expensive prank on one of your friends. So, how do you save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance? Easy. Go to geico.com in 15 minutes, could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. All right, go to chassis.com, chassy.com. We have a bunch of new stuff on there. We have the Newman doc, and we have the 24-hour war. We got the bug movie. We got the new one, King of the Underdogs. We got lots of good stuff, and you can get swag and do all that if you want. Check out Matt at Shift and Steer. Subscribe to that podcast at Podcast One. Corolla drinks for a little Mangria summer. The exhibit, Seeing Red, I got to tell you, get the family and head over to the Peterson Museum. It is unbelievable. It's beautiful. It is beautiful. I'm going to be there very soon. I really want to check this thing out. And, Bruce, what do we got? So go to peterson.org. Peterson.org. Find out all the information about exhibits. Exhibits are always changing and moving and evolving. Bruce, do we have anything for you? Do you want to send anyone anywhere?
Anything you want to?
No, I just looking across the thing and seeing Adam, who has been such a great friend of mine personally and of the hobby, and just you've just been great for the museum and for everybody. I you're so entertaining. We had such a great time in Detroit.
I agree.
And we're going to see you guys in Monterey.
We'll see you in Monterey in a couple of weeks. So until next time, it's Adam Crawford, Bruce Meyer, Terry Cargas, and Matt the Motorator DeAndrea saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.